Chapter 27 Dating the Ages. How old is it? This is one of the basic questions that archaeologists ask whenever they excavate a site or examine an artifact. As we have seen, any dating in years before the present or in AD BC used to be generally little more than a guesstimate. Only tree rings and objects of known age, such as Roman coins, could date prehistoric sites. See chapters 11, 24, and 26. Then, in 1949, Willard Libby came up with the radiocarbon dating method, which made it possible to date sites and artifacts as far back as 50,000 years. Willard Libby, 1908-80, was an American chemist, not an archaeologist. Yet he did more than almost anyone else to revolutionize archaeological research. A farmer's son, Libby became an expert on radioactivity and nuclear science. During the Second World War, he worked as part of the Manhattan Project, which developed the atomic bomb. After the war, he moved to the University of Chicago, where he started work on radiocarbon dating. This, he believed, could offer a way of dating archaeological sites in calendar years. He won a Nobel Prize for his efforts. Libby's research assumed that radiocarbon, radioactive carbon known as carbon-14, is constantly being created in the atmosphere by the interaction of cosmic rays with atmospheric nitrogen. Along with normal, non-radioactive carbon, some of the carbon-14 in the air is absorbed and stored by plants. Animals then acquire the radioactive carbon by eating the vegetation. When an animal or plant dies, it stops exchanging carbon with the environment. From that moment on, the carbon-14 content decreases as it undergoes radioactive decay. Libby realized that measuring the amount of carbon-14 left in a dead plant, wood fragment, or bone provides a way of calculating how old it is. The older the sample, the less carbon-14 it contains. He also determined the rate of decay. Half of the radioactive carbon in any sample will decay after about 5,730 years, the half-life. His experiments took many years to refine. Libby and his colleague James Arnold tried dating samples of known age, using wood from the tombs of Egyptian pharaohs Djoser and Seneferu, which, according to historical sources, dated to about 2625, plus or minus 75 BC. The radiocarbon dates came out at 2800, plus or minus 280 BC. Libby and Arnold published their research in 1949. By 1955, Libby had processed almost 1,000 dates both from objects of known age and from hitherto undated prehistoric sites. Initially, archaeologists wondered just how accurate radiocarbon dating was. For various reasons, some of them were reluctant to provide samples of known age. Many were skeptical about Libby's experimental dates. Others were afraid that radiocarbon dating would disprove their cherished theories. As research progressed, so more and more collaborators provided samples. There were, of course, uncertainties, as was only to be expected with a new dating method. But by the early 1960s, archaeologists had embraced radiocarbon dating with enthusiasm, for it had the potential to revolutionize knowledge of the past 50,000 years of human existence. Anything older than 50,000 years contains traces of radioactive carbon too minute to be useful. If radiocarbon dating was accurate, the potential was enormous. Archaeologists drooled at the thought of being able to date the first Americans or the origins of agriculture in different parts of the world. Theoretically, too, it would be possible to measure the rate of cultural change, like the transition from hunting to farming, or the spread of different prehistoric peoples into Europe or across the Pacific thousands of years ago. The prospects were tantalizing. There were, however, serious technical obstacles to surmount. The results with some types of samples seemed to be more accurate than with others. At first, wood and charcoal set the standard, while bone and shell were regarded as less accurate. It soon became clear, too, that samples had to be collected meticulously to avoid contamination. Their exact position in a site was also important. Results could be skewed by whether a sample had come from a hearth, from the contents of a cooking pot, or simply from charcoal scattered through an occupational level, to mention only a few possibilities. These difficulties were gradually overcome as radiocarbon dating became increasingly sophisticated. Another fundamental problem was that radiocarbon dates were ages in radiocarbon years, not calendar years. Libby had originally assumed that the concentration of radiocarbon in the atmosphere remained constant through time. But this is wrong. Changes in the strength of the Earth's magnetic field and fluctuations in solar activity alter the concentration of radiocarbon both in the atmosphere and in living things. For instance, samples from 6,000 years ago were exposed to much higher radiocarbon concentrations than are samples from today. The solution came by comparing radiocarbon dates against tree rings. By the time radiocarbon dating was developed, tree rings provided accurate calendar dates in the American Southwest and elsewhere to as far back as 12,500 years. This was just before the end of the Ice Age. In recent years, comparisons using fossil corals from the Caribbean and ice cores from Greenland and elsewhere have allowed scientists to date even older objects in calendar years. Environmental fluctuations through the ages mean that the dates calculated solely from the carbon-14 samples and the dates obtained with the assistance of such sources as tree rings, ice cores, or historical documents can vary, sometimes by as much as 2,000 years. Intensive research using ice cores and other sources has resulted in tables that allow researchers to convert carbon-14 dates into accurate calendar chronologies. The first radiocarbon dates for developments such as the origins of farming and the spread of agriculture into Europe caused both amazement and confusion. Gordon Child's widely used dates for major events in Europe were far too late. The origins of farming, for example, jumped from about 4,000 BC back to 9,000 BC. Today, thanks to even more accurate dating, farming is thought to have originated around 12,000 years ago. With thousands of radiocarbon dates to work with, researchers can analyze the past in ways that were unimaginable in Willard Libby's time. By the time radiocarbon dating was developed, archaeologists were working in many parts of the world. The new technique raised basic questions. How long ago did farming take hold in Egypt and Syria, in Turkey and across Europe? How old was Stonehenge, and what were the dates for its different architectural stages, carefully dissected by excavation? For the first time, it was possible to date the arrival of farmers in Scandinavia, the first human settlement of the Americas, and the arrival of iron-using farmers in southern Africa. By the early 1960s, rough outlines of a global prehistory had been assembled from a small patchwork of radiocarbon dates. Samples poured into radiocarbon laboratories from all over the world, Australia, Iceland, Peru, and remote Pacific Islands. For the first time, scholars could compare the dates and calendar years for the beginnings of farming in different parts of the world. They established, for example, that agriculture began at about the same time in the Middle East and in northern China. Above all, one could seriously contemplate writing a history of humankind before literate civilization within a well-established chronological framework. Such an advance was of great importance, especially in regions like Africa south of the Sahara, many parts of India, and the Americas, where the first written records dated to recent centuries. In some parts of Central Africa, the first historical archives date to the 1890s. As radiocarbon dating became more refined, researchers turned to accelerator mass spectrometry, or AMS, for more accurate readings. AMS was a huge advance. It allows samples to be dated on the basis of a single tree ring or an individual wheat seed, or even fragments of a seed. It also allows for the dating of many more samples so that scientists can statistically analyze dozens or even hundreds from a single occupation level. Until recently, timescales in prehistory were still somewhat loose. But the introduction of sophisticated new statistical methods is now producing startlingly accurate chronologies. One famous archaeological site, the West Kennet Long Barrow in southern England, is a case in point. It held the remains of around 40 men, women, and children, and had long been dated to about 3650 BC. It was a communal burial place, but for how long was it in use? Highly accurate radiocarbon dates were the only way to find out. Sophisticated analysis of dozens of samples from the dead showed that the sequence of the burials unfolded over a mere 30 years, beginning in about 3640 BC. Other burial mounds nearby were actively used for three or four generations at most. The West Kennet Long Barrow was a communal burial site used for a short time, almost a family history of some Stone Age farmers. Because it was in use for such a brief period, those buried in the barrow's chambers were not just remote, anonymous ancestors. Some of them had been known personally to the people still going about their business. Looking slightly further afield, we now know that the use of long burial mounds was brief and ceased around 3625 BC. All this raises some fascinating questions. Were people buried in the long barrows in order to claim territory in a place and at a time where competition for land was increasing? Or were the communities that buried their dead in them short-lived because they were unstable and did not endure during times of political stress? The new chronology revealed a time of occasional rapid change and sudden events. Radiocarbon is not the only means of dating the past. The earliest chapters of the past date back more than 3 million years, far beyond the scope of radiocarbon dating. And so we rely on a geological dating method, potassium-argon dating. The potassium-argon method dates rocks by measuring the ratio of radioactive argon to radioactive potassium contained in them. Radioactive potassium-40 decays to radioactive argon-40 in both minerals and rocks. The ratio of argon-40 to potassium-40 in a mineral or rock provides an age for the sample. Argon is an inactive gas that escapes when rock material, such as volcanic lava, is in a molten state. When it cools and crystallizes into volcanic rock, the argon can no longer escape. A spectrometer can measure the concentration of argon in the rock. Researchers can then use the known rate of decay to calculate the rock's age. Fortunately, many early human sites, like those at Olduvai Gorge in Tanzania and near Hadar in Ethiopia, lie in areas of volcanic activity where potassium-argon dating is useful. Some are buried between layers of volcanic ash. At Olduvai, Lewis and Mary Leakey used the potassium-argon method developed in the late 1950s to date human fossils to more than 2.5 million years. See Chapter 29. Human-like footprints in volcanic ash at Laetoli, also in Tanzania, date to about 3.5 million years. Potassium-argon dating has extended the timescale of human evolution to dates that are unimaginably earlier than the few hundred thousand years of previous estimates. People are constantly experimenting with new dating methods, but none rivals the radiocarbon and potassium-argon methods, which span the entire human past. The accuracy improves every year, so soon we will routinely date individual generations. We have come a long way since the 1950s, when, for example, did people settle the offshore islands of the South Pacific? Over 1,500 radiocarbon dates provide a fascinating answer. The settlement of all the islands in the central and eastern Pacific, including Hawaii and Rapa Nui, or Easter Island, took place within a mere century after AD 1000. These were long voyages that unfolded over a remarkably short time. Now we must find out why people made them. Above all, the new dating methods have allowed archaeologists to think of a truly world prehistory, of a human past that linked continents long before the European Age of Discovery in the 15th century. Now we have a sense of human history, where events like the development of farming and urban civilization unfolded in a world that was as diverse as it is today.